Right, I'm running about 30 seconds late this morning. How you doing? It's Sunday morning. It's the 12th. Is it the 12th? It is, of July 2020. It's the BBG with you, Richie Allen, until around noon with a Sunday View. How's your weekend been? Do get in touch with me via Twitter. I look forward to hearing from you. Lots to talk about. Looking through the papers, and we'll hear one or two of the talk shows this morning as well. Ah, sure, it's only great to be alive, so it is.
It's the BBG, not the BBC. You're listening to the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford in Greater Manchester.
It's the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Yes, it's a glorious day in Salford. You do expect me to tell you what it's looking like out there. It's been a nice weekend weather-wise, and I hope it stays that way for the rest of the day. Sunday View it is, then. Yes, yes. Right, lots and lots to get into. Masks, big thing today. Donald Trump, the US President, and the UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson have been pictured wearing face masks over the weekend. And the news shows today are dominated by discussion around mandatory wearing of face masks in shops. Okay, and we'll talk a little bit about that in a few minutes' time. But before that, I've got to mention, the great Jack Charlton died on Friday, I think. It was announced yesterday. He was, I suppose, pivotal in the revival of soccer, the interest in soccer in the Republic of Ireland, in Ireland, my country, in getting people interested in it, more people than ever who had been previously interested in football, because Ireland had a very successful time when Jack was manager, 10-year period. He's, of course, known in the UK for playing hundreds of games for Leeds United, hugely successful club footballer, and, of course, he was in the starting 11 when England won the World Cup in 1966. So an amazing character, really. Micheál Martin is the Irish Taoiseach these days. Yeah, the less said about that, the better. But he was on the Andrew Marr Show this morning talking Brexit and security and all the rest of it. We won't hear any of that, you'll be glad to hear. But he did, of course, have a few words to say about the late Jack Charlton. Here's the current Irish Taoiseach, Micheál Martin.
He is regarded as a hero in Ireland, a person for whom we have the greatest of affection. And I just want to let his family know, as I said yesterday, that in the hearts of every Irish person, there's a special place for Jack Charlton. And it's about more than just football. Those heady days of the late 1980s and 1990 in Ireland were quite extraordinary. It was as if Jack Charlton and the entire Irish team took us out of a bleak and miserable 80s into a very exciting 1990s. And the Italia World Cup campaign was the catalyst for that. My wife and I got married in 1990. Our honeymoon was in the middle of those great series of games, yeah, and the Paddy Bonner penalty save and David O'Leary putting it in and Scalacci eventually killing our hopes and dreams. But Jack Charlton just, I think, personified the essence of sport. And I listened to the players yesterday. That sense of joy that emanated from their conversations about playing football for joy. And the whole country was joyful. And Neil nowadays Martin. In sport, it tends to be too intense. But Charlton's era was about the sheer youthful, childish enjoyment of the wonderful game.
Yeah, I was born loving soccer. In Ireland, we say soccer because football in Ireland is Gaelic football. And I played soccer pretty much through my childhood for my local schoolboy clubs. I wasn't fantastic. I wasn't dreadful either. I loved and worshipped the game. I didn't get into hurling and Gaelic football until I was a bit older, and I never really played them. I loved soccer. And Ireland had had a couple of near misses over the years and had never qualified for anything. And this guy came along, Jack Charlton, in 1986, and immediately Ireland qualified, with a bit of help from Scotland, it must be said, qualified for the European Championships in Germany. And no Irish man or woman who was alive then will ever forget when Ireland played their first game in Stuttgart in the Neckar Stadium, in Stuttgart and managed to beat England 1-0. The most amazing thing. I was 14 at the time, and I remember every second of the day and the subsequent days like it was yesterday. It was an astonishing thing for an Irish team to be playing at a major tournament and to be beating England. Fortuitously, it must be said, we scored an early goal through Ray Houghton and then got battered to be Jesus by England. And some of the saves made by Paddy Bonner in that game, miraculous. And I can still remember photographs in the Irish newspapers of O'Connell Street in Dublin, empty, and the high streets of Cork and Waterford and Limerick and Kilkenny. And it was amazing because GAA people, you know, who loved and played the games, our national games, never really had any interest in soccer. But all of a sudden, the whole country was gripped by it. And we got a taste of it in 88. And then in 1990, we qualified for the World Cup in Italy. And it was even more crazy what happened. They played England again and they drew with England and they drew with Holland and they got through to the last 16 and they played Romania and won on penalties and they got to the quarterfinals. It was an astonishing thing, and he later on took the team to USA 94. A larger-than-life character, an amazing guy, the brother of Bobby Charlton, of course, as well. And he means a lot to Irish people. So when I learned yesterday morning that he passed on, I was a bit emotional, because more so for the days. And I didn't have a lot of great times when I was a teenager, especially a young teenager. But I remember those games fondly. And I'll give you a laugh. We were playing Holland in, I can't remember which stadium we played Holland in. I don't know if it was in Cagliari. It might not have been in Cagliari. I think we played England in Cagliari. But we played Holland anyway, and went behind to a goal from the genius that is Ruud Gullit, and needed a goal. And I swear this is true, right? I describe myself as an agnostic today, right? But I went upstairs. I snuck upstairs during the game. And for some reason, there was a Sacred Heart picture in my bedroom, the bedroom I shared with my brother David. And I got down on my knees and I said an Our Father and prayed. That's how much it meant to me, to us, that we could get a goal and get a draw against Holland. And Niall Quinn popped up later on. So maybe 3.5 million Irish people were praying for a goal and we got it. But look, Jack Charlton, Ar Yesh Dé Gairibh Onam. Good luck to him on his onward journey. Honorary Irishman. But of course, our English listeners, you know, we love him for his World Cup exploits and the things he did with Leeds as well. So there you are. Jack Charlton, rest in peace. Now, let's have a quick look at the front pages of the papers. Jack does appear on many of them. The English papers, there were pictures of him, many of the papers today. The Sunday Telegraph leads with Sunak plans Brexit tax cuts to save economy. That speaks for itself, right? Red tape will be slashed in towns and cities across the country next year to boost business, to try and get a post-coronavirus economic revolution. The Sunday Times, if you are a fan of soccer and a fan of Big Jack, there's an 8-page souvenir pullout in the Sunday Times today. Its headline is Racism Fears Let Sweatshops Go Unchecked. This is madness, right? The Sunday Times led with their own exclusive undercover investigation last week about fashion companies, fast fashion, like Boohoo, using sweatshops to produce their garb. Not in the Far East, by the way, here in the UK, in Leicester, where people are being paid as little as £3 an hour. So Home Secretary Priti Patel has said that cultural sensitivities have prevented the police from tackling illegal sweatshops. Think of grooming gangs, dear listener. We've heard this one before. The police are very culturally sensitive. The boys in blue and the girls in blue. Oh, we'd like to investigate that, but we don't want to be accused of racism. I think it's garbage. I think the truth is far, far, far different. It's starkly different to this notion that they're worried about racism. Anyway, probably they don't give a shit about sweatshops. Probably the real reason. Nor do they have the resources these days to be dealing with that sort of crime. The front page of The Observer, be alarmed, I don't want to alarm you, revealed 20 areas at most risk of local lockdowns. More local lockdowns are on the way. I said this last week. And The Observer has identified 20 councils, including Sheffield and Kirklees, areas which might be told to go back to the original lockdown, no going outside except for exercise, shutting down businesses entirely. This is a scandal. It's a tyranny, but I'm not going to keep banging on about it. That's the Observer. Sunday People has the headline, "Why Are You Hiding Boris?" And it's about families of those who have died of coronavirus marching on Downing Street to demand an inquiry into the government's handling of it. Sunday Express headline is "Britain Takes Back Border Control." This is about Brexit. Swiftly onto the Mail on Sunday. Headline is "Ministers Fear China Will Blitz UK With a Cyber 9-11. Anti-China rhetoric in the Mail on Sunday. These are stories that are made up out of thin air. Imagination stories. Yes, we believe that China will launch a cyber attack on the country to bring it to its knees, and it would be a kind of a cyber 9-11. Any proof? Well, we've lots of proof, but we can't share it with you. You have to take our word for it, right? Or like we took your word for it when you said that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction and could launch against the UK in 15 minutes. Yes, well, we were wrong then, but we're right now, you see. Why don't you fuck off, you lunatics? And stop telling stories about China and Russia and all the rest of it. Hey, listen, also on the Mail on Sunday front page, picture of Ghislaine. Yeah, Ghislaine Maxwell. Exclusive, says the Mail on Sunday. Ghislaine Maxwell's defence: "I didn't introduce Andrew to Epstein, and I'm not a Cruella de Vil." What's this about? Well, the Mail on Sunday has been speaking to friends of Ghislaine Maxwell, allegedly. Allegedly. And they've gone on the offensive, says the Mail, to put her side of the story in the public domain. They have told the Mail on Sunday she didn't introduce Epstein to Prince Andrew and that she fears dying of COVID-19 while in prison. How interesting that her friends would mention that, that the Mail would run that. Maybe that's giving us a heads up, maybe, that she will die of COVID while in jail. Ghislaine hasn't met Jeffrey Epstein in person for over 15 years, she alleges, and she is crying because some of her closest friends have lost their jobs because of their association with her. She hasn't had a haircut in a year while being on the run, presumably, and she is being moved from cell to cell for her own safety. Apparently, she has been given paper-thin paper sheets so that she can't hang herself. Yeah. The Sunday Mirror story about Madeleine McCann and Portuguese authorities searching wells. And that's about it for the front. No, the Star on Sunday runs with a picture of a ghost hanging around the grave of Princess Diana. Yes. Yes. It is 13 minutes past the hour. Let's have a tune. Yes, the Sunday Star, the Star on Sunday, a photograph of a ghost that is hanging around. That is hanging around the crypt where Diana's family are all entombed, yes. Shall we have some Nina Simone?
Birds flying high, you know how.
Nina Simone on the Richie Allen Radio Show, Sunday View for July 12th, 2020. The time is 17 minutes past the hour, or 16 and a half, if you want to be nitpickety. This week saw Schedule 21 added to the Coronavirus Act, talked about it on Twitter, talked about it on Facebook. A public health officer can direct you to be removed to a testing centre, and it is an offence to refuse. A constable can be called and you will be dragged to a testing centre if a public health officer deems that you might be a super spreader. Forced testing. This is true. It ain't no conspiracy theory. This shocked so many people on Twitter. When I put this on Twitter on Friday morning, this shocked so many people that some of them were actually tweeting full fact to ask full fact if this was true. And I could kind of understand that, even though we had put the link to the NHS England website to prove that this was true. So horrified were some people that they began to tweet full fact to say, listen, will you look into this for us? No, you gombean. It's in the language right there. You live in tyranny. Right. A lot of talk about masks today, as I said earlier on. Michael Gove, the Chancellor of the Duchy of Lancaster, squirrely little dude, was asked about making masks compulsory in shops from now on. Here is Michael Gove with his response to Sophie Ridge.
I think we should do everything we can to encourage people and to support people to wear face masks in enclosed places, particularly shops. And I think it will be the case that government will be able to help in that regard. We're investing in significantly increasing the capacity to manufacture face masks in the UK. My colleague in the Cabinet Office, Theodore Agnew, has been leading a drive to ensure that we have face mask manufacturing ability, which is based in Wales and in Burnley, and that will make it easier for all of us to wear face masks as appropriate.
I just wonder if actually people need to be more than encouraged to wear face masks, because, you know,
listen to this now. The media are not asking, there is no balance, as we well know. But the mask, no pun intended, is properly slipped. Rather than flesh out the need or the lack of need for them, the media is putting real pressure on politicians to agree that the mask should be, you know, compulsory.
I just wonder if actually people need to be more than encouraged to wear face masks, because, you know, the message on this has been, frankly,
more than encouraged,
all over the place. You know, the latest YouGov data shows only 36% of us are wearing a face mask in public places. Compare that to 90% in Singapore, 83% in Italy, 78% in France, 65% in Germany. And it's not that surprising when, until recently, you know, the government ministers and scientists have been telling us that actually, frankly, they don't make that much difference. Boris Johnson and Rishi Sunak both pictured out and about this week not wearing face masks themselves. I mean, how can you expect the public to wear them when your own members of the government aren't?
Well, I think there are a number of things there that need to be unpacked. The first thing is that face masks are appropriate in some settings, not in others. You talk about people being out and about. Wearing a face mask when you are out and about, outdoors, is significantly less necessary than when you're indoors. There's a distinction there, one that's well understood by the public, and which is underpinned by science.
Yeah. The Centres for Disease Control and Prevention have said from day one that masks are pretty useless. This has been echoed by NHS England at the very beginning of this crisis, alleged crisis. And if you look through the peer-reviewed papers on masks, the majority of them say that masks are useless. And in fact, they are dangerous, potentially dangerous to the wearer. But you'll understand as we go along why they're really pushing the masks, right? Rachel Reeves, then. Is Reeves the... Rachel Reeves is a shadow cabinet minister. So she's a Labour MP. What does she reckon? She was on the Mar show and she was asked about the masks.
Yes, I think that would be a sensible way forward. I think people are increasingly wearing them, but some greater clarity from government about that, I think, would be helpful. People want to do the right thing, but they want to know what the right thing is. And so we already have it on public transport. I think it would inspire greater confidence and might encourage more people to go out and spend money if they see more people wearing face masks in shops.
Yeah, Rachel Reeves. And you are going to be told in the very near future that wearing them outside is necessary. And you'll believe me when you hear a bit of audio I've got for you later on. I told you about the media pushing it hard. Rather than asking about it or challenging it, they're pushing at the media that we should all be wearing masks when we're in pubs or restaurants or bars or what have you. Here's the proof of it. Here's Sophie Ridge again. This time she's speaking to the Shadow Business Secretary, Labour's Lucy Powell, on masks.
One of the big parts of trying to reopen, particularly the hospitality industry, is to convince people that it's safe to go shopping, safe to go to restaurants and bars, and of course face coverings could be a big part of that. Do you think that face coverings should be mandatory in shops, as they are in Scotland? And was it a good example to set last week when you and Keir Starmer went to a bar in London without wearing face masks yourselves?
Amazing. Masks, mandate them, and you weren't setting a very good example, were you, when you went into a pub with the Labour leader, Keir Starmer, and you weren't wearing masks, says Ridge.
Well, I think we need real clarity on this issue now from the government.
Wouldn't it be helpful to actually wear the face coverings?
Well, yes, and we followed the guidance that is the guidance in BrewDog, where we were on Monday, obviously in bars and restaurants. It's not mandatory to wear face masks so that you can eat and drink and be in those locations.
Was it a mistake to not wear one, though?
But it wasn't what the requirement was of us going into that venue. But I do agree with you that we do need to get a lot more confidence back in the system. And if mandatory wearing of face masks in shops will help to do that, then we absolutely support it. And we think
I do agree with you, Powell says to the interviewer, Ridge, that to get more confidence back into consumers, get everybody wearing masks in shops. It's dreadful, this. It's not new to you. I know I'm banging on about something I've banged on about many times in the past, but it's wretched. The decision has already been made. Don't think for a minute that this is under revision, whether or not people should be wearing masks in public. The decision has been made. This is a play, a theatre, theatrical production you're witnessing there, right? And she bangs on to Powell about wearing the masks. Shocking. Now, another big story in the last week is whether or not people should be returning to work. Better for people. I mean, if you have to work, right? If you have to go to work, better that you do it out and about with people, that you're mingling with people and interacting with people and not being confined to your house. And it's also better for the economy, because if you're out and about at lunchtimes, on your breaks, if you're working near high streets or if you're working in city centres, well, it helps the bloody economy. And the economy is suffering badly because people are not at work. Right. Back to the squirrely Michael Gove, the Chancellor of the Duchy of Lancaster. Should people now be returning to work? Gove was asked by Sophie Ridge.
We want to see more people back at work, on the shop floor, in the office, wherever they can be. Of course, in some cases, it's appropriate and convenient for people to work from home, but we want to make sure that where people can add value, where the economy can benefit from people being at work, that they are at work. We want to make sure that the economic engines of this country are fired up again, and that's why the Chancellor made the series of announcements that he made earlier this week, in order to make sure that we're in a position to be able to provide people with safety and security at work, to protect their jobs and to guarantee jobs in the future.
Interesting to hear you say there that for some people it may be more convenient to work at home. Do you think some of us have got a bit too used to working from home?
No, I think that working from home, of course, has been, for many people, an absolute requirement during the pandemic. But there are certain jobs, of course, where it's impossible to work from home. You have to be on the shop floor in order to be able to be part of the productive economy and to enjoy your work. But I think that one of the things the pandemic has also taught us is that there are some roles which can be performed effectively from home, the way in which a number of social media apps and other devices have enabled us to work from home, means that we can rethink work in certain ways. And I know, for example, that within the civil service, we will increasingly be using some of the technology that we've used during the pandemic to think not just about enabling people to work from home, but also enabling people to work in areas other than London. And one of the things that we want to do is to make sure that we distribute the range of civil service jobs and responsibilities more equitably across the whole United Kingdom.
Yeah, he's talking there about decentralising the civil service. They're going to send civil servants to York, apparently. That was in the press this morning. It's of no interest to you, nor is it of any interest to me. Keeping people at home is important. Now, you would imagine a trade unionist. You would imagine a trade unionist would be supportive of or working towards getting people back to work in order to preserve their jobs. That's what you would imagine, right? But we live in an upside-down world now. We live in Alice in Wonderland's world. We live in a world that even Lewis Carroll couldn't have imagined. It's insane, this. Wait till you hear Francis O'Grady from the Trades Union Congress. Top trades union. Say it again, Richie. She's a top trade unionist in the country. Francis O'Grady. Little lady. And you would imagine she'd be like, get them back to work. We need to get people back to work. Their jobs are not going to be there. If we keep them at home, their jobs are not going to be there. This is pure vaudeville. Listen to O'Grady. Shouldn't we get people back to work, Frances?
Employers need to be carrying out proper risk assessments and publishing them and consulting with their unions and their workforces about them. The question is what's safe? And I think what's important is that the Prime Minister recognises that the best way to get people back to work is to do it safely. The best way to drive up consumer confidence is to know that we've got a really effective test and trace system in place.
Unbelievable. This wench would describe herself as a socialist and a trade unionist. Let's keep our people at home. And let's tell their employers to spend hundreds of fucking thousands of pounds that they don't have to make a safe space even more safe by putting in partitions and sanitary stations and all the fucking rest of it. So while the company is doing that and the employer is at home, the employee is at home, I mean, the company is going out of business, you daft bint! So there isn't any job for them to return to in the second place. Do you get me? And then the socialist says, the alleged socialist, let's get an effective track and trace system in place before we send our members back to work. Oh, you've no idea what this does to me, listening to this, as a proud trade unionist myself. This is mental stuff, isn't it?
So that when we do get local outbreaks, as we've seen in meatpacking factories and fast fashion, that we deal with it properly.
Close them all
and
down.
That people can afford to the take time off sick.
The trade unionists. Close them all down.
Instead of having to rely on £96 a week statutory sick pay, we need to see a boost to that and need to make sure that all workers are covered. The first thing that employers should be doing is making sure that workers are socially distanced.
And fuck off. Absolute wench. I mean, socially distanced and track and trace and don't let them back and keep them furloughed forever. That'll be lovely, Francis. Keep them furloughed for so long that the company just fucking winds up and there's nothing for them to do then. And then, of course, skip 6 months down the road, they won't even get a decent unemployment assistance payment from the government. And why? Because the government will be telling you, we're fucking broke, Francis. We're broke, Francis, because we had to borrow billions, Francis, to keep your employers, your members, your employees, your members furloughed, you crazy cow. And now we can't give them more than a few bob a week. I know it's terrible, isn't it? Isn't it? And they're going to food banks even more than ever before. Yeah, yeah. Where were you, Francis O'Grady? You moron. That's how bad it is. That's how bad it makes me feel. It's insane to be sitting there watching people like that on television, calling themselves trade unionists and socialists and basically selling their members' futures down the river, flushing them down the fucking toilet. Imagine. This is 2020, isn't it? I'm sure it is. Here's Sam Cooke back with more after Sam.
Wonderful world this would be.
Yes. Sam Cooke on the Richie Allen Radio Sunday View. It's a glorious day out there today. For those of you wondering what to do with yourselves on this fine Sunday, what can you do today? Lawrence Buckman.
Enjoy yourself and kill a granny is the answer.
Is always the answer. Back in 60 seconds.
Renowned healer Mark Byerski travels the world to find the most unique and powerful crystals for self-healing. Since the ancient times, crystals have been used as healing tools. They hold a natural healing vibration and are highly charged in positive energy. Mark teaches how to channel the universal energy and transfer it to the crystal to activate its healing power. Each crystal is used for its unique ability to target a different physical or emotional challenge. Mark Byerski is an author, healer, speaker, and founder of the Pure Energy Healing Academy. He shares powerful messages of inspiration and healing on his daily YouTube videos, reaching millions worldwide. Mark's crystals, healing oils, and incense sticks are most sought after by other healers. His collection is available online at www.markbyerski.com. His work is presented through Lemon House, a company that creates and curates consciously made gifts.
Welcome back to the programme, Sunday View for July 12th, 2020, with me, Richie Allen, live from Salford, yeah, great city of Salford. Right, moving on, two Imperial College people are doing, or were doing, the rounds of the media this morning. This is important now. You will have heard a lot this week, this last week even, about how they've just discovered that the virus can be airborne in microparticles and can hang around in the air and infect us all. This is the big thing this week, right? Right, okay. They're making it up as they go along, right? This is why they're, one of the reasons they're justifying masks being made mandatory, right? So Wendy Barclay is a influenza virology expert at the Imperial College London, at Imperial College London, and she's also a member of SAGE, right? This is the group that's advising the government, SAGE, the Scientific Advisory Group on Emergencies, SAGE, right? So Wendy Barclay was on with Andrew Marr. Listen to Andrew Marr's introduction because it gives you a flavour of the stories doing the rounds.
Now then, airborne transmission of coronavirus doesn't just mean somebody spluttering next to you on the bus. It's about how tiny droplets of virus can stay in the air for quite a while.
I know, but every time I hear it myself, I laugh. Because if I don't, I don't know what I'll do. I'll just go and kill a granny, maybe. Listen again. Astonishing stuff, this. They make it up as they go along. Right. 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 Come on, Andrew.
Now then, airborne transmission of coronavirus doesn't just mean somebody spluttering next to you on the bus.
That's what we used to think, right? Right.
It's about how tiny droplets of virus can stay in the air for quite a while. And that's a prospect which raises obvious worries about daily life.
Yes, obvious worries about daily life. The BBC is nothing more now than a purveyor of the finest fear porn you'd ever imagined. Beautiful. Droplets that hang around in the air for some time and the implications for daily life. Ooh, right? Right.
The World Health Organization this week says it's got concerns.
It must be true then, if the World Health Organization says it.
Professor Wendy Barclay is chair of the Influenza Virology Department at Imperial College London, and she's a world expert on the airborne...
She's a world expert, says Andrew Marr. This isn't journalism. This is propaganda. She's a world expert, so what you're going to hear from Wendy... What you're going to hear from Wendy, you've got to believe it, right? You've got to believe it. You've got to believe what Wendy tells you, because she's a world expert.
Transmission of respiratory viruses and a member of the government's SAGE committee. When I spoke to her just a little earlier, I began by asking why airborne transmission was such a worry.
Yes, what did Wendy say?
Yeah, so what we know is that viruses can be expelled into the air from infected people in very small droplets. And sometimes even in droplets that are so small, we call them aerosols. And
the aerosols, right?
Aerosols can remain suspended in the air and can travel some distance away from the person who's breathed them out. And we do know that SARS-CoV-2...
Yeah. At some time in the last 2 weeks, human beings have evolved into aerosol canisters. We're basically human deodorant tins. Is what we are. And when we cough now, we cough out aerosol spray that hangs around for ages in the room like that air freshener. And, well, I mean, that's dangerous, right?
Two, the virus that causes COVID, can remain viable, remain infectious.
In the air.
In these very small droplets. So that raises the possibility and indeed the likelihood.
The possibility... Indeed, the likelihood. Well, which is it? Which is it? Is it possible or is it a likelihood?
That COVID can be transmitted through these small particles that can travel through the air.
Do we have any idea?
This is a $64,000 question. Andrew, how long can they hang around?
Idea about how long these particles remain dangerous.
Oh, my God. Well,
so laboratory studies where the virus has been sort of purposefully put into the air tell us that the virus can remain there for more than an hour in its infectious form.
Now, for more than an hour.
Now, this week, the World Health Organization said...
And he just moves on.
Airborne transmission can't be ruled out in some cases. Was that an important change of emphasis from them?
Yeah, very important change of emphasis. And you have to wonder why. Because they want you to wear a mask all the time.
Yes, it is the first time that the World Health Organization have sort of acknowledged that the airborne route contributes to the spread of this disease. Of course, there are other routes as well that we have to keep bearing in mind the close contact routes, directly touching someone or touching a contaminated surface. So, you know, washing our hands is still very important.
Yeah, it's still important to wash your hands now, you dirty bastards. Keep washing your hands.
Important. But what this new acknowledgement means is that...
This new acknowledgement
is that
we are now basically cans of Lynx. We are now cans of Lynx Africa. Every one of us, when we open our mouths and we cough, we produce an aerosol-type spray that hangs around for an hour. And therefore, we're all super spreaders, whether we are asymptomatic or pre-symptomatic. Pre-symptomatic means that you will be symptomatic. Asymptomatic means that you have the virus, but you don't show any symptoms. Pre-symptomatic means you have the virus, but you haven't yet shown any symptoms. What they're trying to say here is every one of us is now basically dangerous, capable of acting like a aerosol can and projecting the disease in micro droplets into the room we're in, where it will hang around for an hour waiting to infect somebody. Hey, Andrew Marr then has the brainwave that, well, if we thought that choirs and singing and being loud was dangerous before, it must be dangerous now.
So this was also a week which, with the beginning of the unlocking, lots of people are thinking about going back to, I don't know, choir practices or gyms or exercise classes. Are there some things, thinking about the airborne transmission of COVID, that we should be avoiding?
There have been a number of outbreaks associated with choirs.
Yes, with choirs.
For example, and it's quite possible that we generate more of these small droplets when we talk loudly or sing or perhaps when we're exercising. So in those circumstances, you definitely would want to be in a well-ventilated room.
Wouldn't you love for me to have the ability to possess Andrew Marr or Sophie Ridge? Wouldn't you love it? I don't mean me, I'm not patting myself on the back. But any one of us, wouldn't one of us love to be basically to possess, a la The Exorcist, Andrew Marr, to laugh that crazy bitch off the airwaves? Imagine if I was given the opportunity to interview someone like that. Just for a few minutes. Please. I'd love to. There wouldn't be any pea soup or revolve in my head 360 degrees. No, I just laughed the woman off the air. Insane, this, isn't it?
Room, and perhaps also the social distancing that we've all become used to is useful. Use of face masks is really about protecting other people from you.
Yes, you see, this is the whole crux of it now. This is the crux of it. Face masks are not about protecting yourself. They are about protecting other people from you, she says. We're getting to the nub of it now.
About protecting other people from you in case you're infected. We do.
In case you're infected, you know, just in case, you know. Why are you wearing a face mask, Baldy? You seem more... just in case I'm infected, you know. Just in case I'm infected. And we just learned last week that we're all human aerosol canisters. And I don't know if I'm infected or not at any time of the year, so I should wear a face mask. If I care a drop or a jot for other people, I should wear that feckin' mask, right? Right.
Do you think that this virus is breathed out in droplets? Whether or not those droplets are large or small, it's quite likely that a face mask will remove some of them from your breath. And so if you, you know, are infected by the virus but perhaps not yet ill, but you are at a point where you've got virus in your breath, then you may be hazardous to other people.
Yes, you might have virus in your breath. Virus breath. You won't be calling people, you know, you won't be giving out about people's bad breath anymore. Virus breath, you virus-breathed bastard. Why aren't you wearing a mask, virus breath? Oh, Christ. And Mars sits there. I know he had a stroke. I know the left side of his brain is fucking gone. But the right-hand side of his brain is still there. Come on, Andrew. Just one day do your job, man. You know, if you get fired, I'll give you a job myself. I swear to God. If one of these heavyweight presenters has the courage to do the right thing for humanity, I will crowdfund your wages to come and work with me. Honest to God, I will. I'll do that. And you'll have all the fun in the world working with me, because you'll be able to say whatever the fuck you want and investigate whatever you want and ask whatever bloody questions you want. Just do it for the people one time. Laugh them off the air. That was Wendy Barclay. Now, Wendy has a good mate called Robin Shattuck. He's a big mate of hers. He works at Imperial College too. And he's heading up their COVID vaccine development scheme. Yeah. They're all members of, what's it called, CEPI. They're all Bill Gates' pals, all these people. So Robin Shattuck heading up the search for a COVID vaccine. He's on with Sophie Ridge. And the first question she asks him is the right question. Where are we with the development of the vaccine, Robin?
So we're at the stage where we're testing it in our first volunteers. We're doing that very cautiously because safety is of paramount importance. So we've vaccinated 15 volunteers so far, going very slowly. And in the coming weeks, we'll be ramping up to include another 200 to 300 participants.
And what chance would you give the vaccine of success? I know it's difficult to put a figure on it, but do you think it's greater than 50%?
I think it's very difficult to predict. One of the things that we don't understand right now is what level of immunity you need to prevent infection. If you only need a very small amount of immunity, I suspect most of the vaccines that are being developed will actually work. But if you need a very strong immune response or a particular quality of immune response, we'll see that actually will be a shaking out of some of these candidates. We hope we'll be the candidate, one of the candidates is successful, but there's no certainty with any individual approach.
Yeah. Shit from Shinola there. What's her follow-up? I think it's along the lines of, will it work, the vaccine?
It's interesting to hear you say that there's so much we're still learning about the immunity that we are given from the virus and the immunity that we need. Is there a chance that a vaccine might not work at all?
No, I think that's a very low risk.
Yeah, you would say that, wouldn't you?
I think because there are now so many different candidates being developed, we will see a number of these coming through. And of course, having a lot of different candidates being developed spreads that risk of failure. I think we're very lucky in the UK that we have two very strong candidates, the one from Imperial, the one from Oxford. And so we're pretty well placed. But there's still not a certainty that either of those two will work.
And of course, if the Imperial vaccine does work, when is the earliest that people could get their hands on it?
Now, listen carefully. She asks about a time scale for when it could basically be given to people. And his answer is fascinating. And it's one of those kind of game changers. He gives the game away here in his answer.
No.
So we anticipate, if everything goes really well, that we'll get an answer as to whether it works by early next year. And we have put in place the infrastructure to make enough vaccine for the whole of the UK. So assuming that the funding is there to purchase that vaccine, we could have that vaccine rolled out across the UK in the first half of next year.
Right. So they got the infrastructure to basically deliver a dose for every single person in the UK. Okay, that's very interesting point number one. Game changer number one, right? Because we're ready to go. We can get it. Once we have it approved, the infrastructure is already there to get it to every person, every man, woman and child in the country. Right, okay. Gets even more interesting now, this. Distribution and priority, asks Sophie Ridge.
And would the UK take priority in that scenario?
Well, they would, but only because the UK has funded us up to this stage. So the UK are looking at doing an advanced purchase of the vaccine so that it's ready to go. That doesn't mean that it's going to be excluded from being provided to other parts of the world. It's just that we're living in that space where we don't know if this vaccine will work. As soon as we know it works, everybody will be queuing up and wanting to get hold of the vaccine. And there's likely to be a big gap between success in the clinic and actually being able to make it available for multiple populations around the world.
Yeah, as you say, the kind of rollout feels really key. It's interesting to hear you talking about early next year because, you know, I remember the time when, you know, government ministers were talking about possibly having a vaccine by September.
By September. Not a word from Ridge about safety. Not a word. Ridge should be saying to him, even if you get it out by early next year, you're going to be cutting a lot of corners safety-wise, aren't you? By your own admission. But she doesn't. She's not interested in doing her job.
By September. I mean, that feels quite optimistic now, doesn't it?
I think that feels very optimistic, but you know...
But you never know.
Again, all bets are off. It's still a possibility, but I think it's a really low possibility, partly because the number of infections in the UK have fallen so much, which is...
Yeah. And of course, this is hugely important. What he says here, this is the game changer.
The possibility, partly because the number of infections in the UK have fallen so much, which
number of infections in the UK has fallen so much, meaning it's very difficult to develop a vaccine,
which is a great thing for the UK, but it means making testing a vaccine and seeing if it works so much harder. So
yeah, it would do. Natural immunity, as they've been saying in New York City, by the way. In New York City, they reckon 80% herd immunity through no vaccine, through non-symptomatic or asymptomatic people having it. Basically, what happens with viruses is they go through a population, and fairly quickly. And most people don't get sick. The vast majority don't. And antibodies are built up, and you've got immunity. That's how it works. They're seeing this in New York now. We're seeing it in the UK. The virus is on the wane. It's virtually gone. This guy is lamenting the fact that infection is so low that we're struggling to get a vaccine. This is a game-changing announcement by him in the interview. Do you think Sophie picks up on it?
In some ways, the better we are at preventing or reducing transmission, the harder it is to demonstrate whether a vaccine works. And that's why we're looking to do trials in other parts of the world where the transmission is much higher.
Yeah. What does Ridge say?
What kind of places are you looking to trial it?
What kind of places are you looking to trial it in? She doesn't go back to his point about infection rates being so low that they're struggling to get people with the virus to be exposed to the vaccine. Hilarious stuff this, isn't it? Isn't it? Or maybe it isn't. Anyway, he goes on to talk about trialing it in South America and in Africa. It's what big pharmaceutical companies do. They go to some of the most deprived places in the world and they give potentially deadly dangerous drugs to people whom they pay a pittance to be guinea pigs. Aren't they just swell, those big pharma companies? Off to Africa now and off to South America, where we'll inject people. We will lie to those people about the potential risks. We will give them a few dollars and we'll inject them. It's what we do. It's 8 minutes to the top of the hour. This is Sunday View with myself, Richie Allen, live from Salford in Greater Manchester. I've had an email from my mate Michael Cohen, my very, very good mate Michael Cohen. Michael, I'll be in touch. It just occurred to me that a recent telephone number change by yours truly, maybe you didn't get the text message with the number. I'll give you a shout, Michael, if not later on, certainly tomorrow. My good mate Michael in Fallowfield died in the wool. Socialist. Old school. Yes. Yes. Right, moving on. What have we got time for? Got time for one more story. Be afraid, be very afraid. Look, what they're going to do is, they're going to announce in the next few days that wearing masks in shops, pubs, whatever, mandatory. Even in pubs, yes. They are going to say, even in pubs, you should wear a mask. And just move it to the side when you have your sip of Bacardi and Coke. This is insane. But there's no opposition to it. That's what they're going to do. They're going to say that these measures will remain in place until everybody takes a vaccine. That's where it's going. Listen, let's finish up with this story about Facebook. Labour, that's the Labour Party in the UK, have been accused of virtue signalling over the weekend. Because Labour has joined Coca-Cola and Adidas, or Adidas, depending on how you pronounce it, in suspending ads on Facebook. Why? Because they claim, Labour and Coca-Cola and Adidas and others, they claim that Facebook isn't doing enough to counter hate speech. Yes, hate speech. And they are withdrawing their revenue because apparently Facebook generates 98% of its income that way, through advertising placed on the social media network, blah, blah, blah. Okay? Labour is doing this on behalf of Black Lives Matter. Yes. How virtuous of Labour to do so. And Labour were persuaded to do this by a group called Stop Hate for Profit. Stop Hate for Profit, which is campaigning to reduce the advertising revenue of Facebook and Twitter until they get rid of hate. How noble of them. What they really want to do, of course, is kill any idea. The last, I don't know, vapours. The last whiff of free speech, they want to get rid of it. They're not really going after dickheads who swear at black people and Asian people and use ethnic slurs. That's not who they really want to get rid of. That's the smokescreen. That's vulgar stuff. But we've got laws and we've got rules already about that sort of thing. They want to get rid of people like yours truly, who would occasionally use the platforms to make a point that isn't very popular. A point about something, about identity, politics, about whatever. That's the target. Don't believe them that they care about black people. They couldn't give an arse about black people or people from Oriental backgrounds or from Latin American backgrounds or whatever, or Asian backgrounds. They don't care. That's the smokescreen. We must protect these vulnerable people. These vulnerable people. My mate Jane works in my local laundrette. Lovely lady. Gotten to know her. Jane is mixed race, but she's dark-skinned. Father is from the Caribbean. She told me the other day, she said she'd come on the programme, by the way, Jane. She told me the other day, she said, Richie, I'm sick to death of people telling me that they're protecting me. I don't need it. I'm fed up of it. Grew up in Salford. Spent most of my days around Salford, around Manchester. Never saw any racism. I got every job I ever applied for because I've got a personality and I've got a brain, she said. Fed up with people telling me that I should be hurt by things and that I should be beaten down by things. I couldn't give a shit, she said. And you'll find that most people like me feel like that. And I said, what do you think, Jane? They're not really trying to protect you, really. It's really free speech. It's to impose self-censorship. And she said, you're absolutely bang on, she said. Fact. So what does Labour have to say about this then? Rachel Reeves, the shadow business secretary, was asked about it on the Andrew Marr show. Is it true that you're boycotting Facebook? Not boycotting Facebook, but that you're not going to spend money with Facebook in honour of Black Lives Matter. What did she say?
Well, all MPs and the Labour Party use Facebook to get across our message. But what we're not doing at the moment is advertising on Facebook. And that is in solidarity with the Black Lives Matter campaign, but also in line with what many businesses are doing this month, which is to express our concerns about the failure of Facebook to take down some hateful material from their platforms and to take more responsibility.
Hateful material. There are things being said by people on Facebook that we don't like and we insist they take it down or we won't spend any more money on advertising with them. There's a word that rhymes with stunt, but I've never used it in a broadcast and I won't today.
Responsibility for the lies and the propaganda that are sometimes put out there on Facebook. And Facebook.
Shut up, you tart. So that's Labour virtue signalling to the moon. Jean Anne makes a brilliant point to me there with a message. Thanks, Jean Anne. She says Kellogg's and Coca-Cola and others are giving lots of money to Black Lives Matter. Nobody's asking why, says Jean Anne. We're asking why. It's come up a couple of times on the programme of late. Black Lives Matter is effectively a political organisation now and it is not representing those people, the grassroots people who were rightly up in arms over the years when a black person was murdered by a cop in America. It's a totally different thing, is that. 2 minutes to the top of the hour. Have a fantastic Sunday. I really mean that. The weather is absolutely gorgeous. If you're wondering what the hell should I do with myself, remind them, Larry.
Enjoy yourself and kill a granny is the answer.
Enjoy yourselves and kill a granny is the only thing to do. Hey, listen. Have a brilliant Sunday. Look after yourselves, one another. I'll see you tomorrow at 5 o'clock. I'm going out with this. Our Yeshde Gareva Anam. This is for Jack Charlton. R.I.P. Bye now. Bye.